Hunter, what's up, brother?
Hello, hello.
How goes things?
I'm in love with you. Things could be a lot better right now. I'm currently laying in bed with what I believe to be a head cold. I have a lot of NyQuil in the system. So if I fall asleep mid Twitter space, that is why.
And this on our day, like on the day of our Big 12 consummation, this you're sick in bed.
It's really a microcosm of the entire West Coast Conference era, that like of 13 years of just kind of crap, sometimes good, sometimes maybe crap. I'm sick on the very last day as we enter, which leads me to believe that tomorrow I'll wake up with like the strength of Samson as BYU emerges a member of the Big 12. But for now, things are looking bleak. In all honesty, I'm just hoping to not be sick by 4th of July because I'm trying to party in the Provo Parade on Tuesday and Stadium of Fire tomorrow night. So if you're in my section tomorrow for Stadium of Fire as I listen to some Journey, I apologize if you're sick the next day.
You know what? It's probably worth it to get a listen to Don't Stop Believing.
I'm waiting for some Separate Ways, get a little Stranger Things remix in there, you know? But
what's the song? It's like Someday Love Will Find You. Is that Journey?
Yeah. Pretty sure that's Separate
Forgive.
Ways.
That's Forgive Separate me. Ways, yeah.
Yeah. The aficionado Jackson. He knows better than I, but yes, that's Separate Ways.
All right.
When Faithfully starts playing in Provo, like, I don't know. Hopefully they go a little loose on the honor code rules.
Bro, Faithfully playing in Provo is going to trigger the second coming. That's just my take.
Replacing Power?
Yes. Exactly.
It should be replacing Power. Imagine just how, like, whack that would be at BYU. Like, instead of Power, it's just Faithfully. Everybody, like, all the opposing fans, the opposing players are just so confused that, like, you just take advantage. That's like, it's like a power play in hockey. You just, like, have a boost where, like, the other team, like, cannot play because they're so confused.
It really would be, like, that would be the most fitting thing to ever happen. As Journey comes, plays Faithfully, it triggers the second coming, all as on the first day of BYU being in the Big 12.
I mean, will that, like, but can anything top, like, the rap? Okay, like, I just, so the purpose of this Twitter space is we have, like, you know, five of us sitting here just degenerates wanting to talk about BYU football in the middle of a Friday afternoon. Has there been a better moment in the last 12 years of BYU football than September 10th and 11th of 2021? Like, the complete rapture of getting the Big 12 invite and beating Utah all in the same weekend?
Easy answer is no.
The real answer is hell no.
Is that the hard answer?
Like, definitely not. Like, I think Robbie tweeted it out earlier this morning. Like, let me pull it up so I can have, because credit to Robbie, it was a fantastic tweet. And I think one that everyone would be able to come together and accept as, like, write the DNC. The DNC section about it, because it absolutely was right. As I try to fill here as I pull it up, but he said the 48-hour stretch where BYU was invited to the Big 12 and snapped the 9-game losing streak versus Utah was sports nirvana and may never be topped in my lifetime. And I think that really does sum it up. Like, with the exception of BYU winning the Big 12 and probably winning a New Year's Six bowl game or going to the playoff and winning playoff games, or dare I even say reaching / winning the national championship. Like, that's the only thing I think that can top that 48-hour stretch.
I saw somebody tweeted, I didn't see who it was, but they tweeted, like, looking back, like, there was no way BYU was going to lose to Utah after the Big 12 announcement. And honestly, like, I kind of, that's a pretty solid take. Like, I mean, just how much magic was in the air, for lack of a better term, just the momentum that was really just going around the fan base, around the program. Like, Lavelle's house was as electric as ever. Cause, you know, like, even without the Big 12 announcement, that Utah game just felt different. Like, I mean, obviously they hadn't played at, they hadn't played Utah in 2 years. It was like a different, it just, there was a different feel to it than other years. Like it was like, okay, this might actually be the year. And then when the Big 12 announcement came out, it was like, yep, this is the year. Like there was no, like there was no way Utah was going to come in and obviously they played like it, like they played scared. It was awesome. You don't really see a Kyle Whittingham team go out and just crap the bed like they did. It was, that was just like Robbie said, that was sports nirvana. I mean, it doesn't really get better than that weekend.
There were just so many moments in that game where it was just like, oh, we got this. Like the first moment was when Charlie Brewer overthrew the guy by like 15 feet and Kalani ran down the sideline and caught the football. Like that was moment number one where I was like, oh yeah, BYU is not losing this game. And then the build up to that all week had been all about how, like all the turnovers that BYU had committed over the 9-game losing streak. And then Chaz Aiyu comes in like first or second drive of the game and picks off a pass. And then, was it D'Lo who forced the fumble or was it Caleb Hayes?
Shoot. I don't even remember.
Whoever
was Caleb Hayes on Caleb on the team?
He was on the team, but I don't think he was playing that early though. I think it took him a while to kind of get in the rotation.
There's someone in the space that would probably know, sitting there as a listener.
I won't rat him out. I've already sent the invite if you'd like to be a speaker on this. But it was just one of those like moments of perfection that I'm not sure I'll ever feel again as a sports fan. And I'm not sure if I ever need to feel it again as a sports fan. I hope I do, but just such a, oh, Trevor coming in clutch, Isaiah Heron. It's just absolute perfection. Okay. So now that we have a little bit of an audience, welcome everyone to the Hype Train live podcast. As we celebrate, I don't want to view this as a funeral of the independence era, more of like a celebration of life.
A New Orleans funeral.
New Orleans funeral. But brethren, how are we feeling on this, the day of our ultimate triumph?
Hey boys, can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so a lot of feelings, a lot of thoughts. I know I normally don't participate in the BYU Twitter as much as I should. I really need to get on here because there's some dope dudes. Just one quick thought to cap off that insane weekend with BYU getting the official invite to the Big 12. We kind of knew the week before-ish that it was probably going to happen at the Arizona game down in Vegas. And so that entire week for me, just Arizona in Vegas, my hometown was awesome. First time at Allegiant Stadium. Then we kind of knew it was happening, then beating Utah. But the thing that I wanted to plug into our conversation was the Jaren Hall quote that not a lot of people have heard, but just kind of capped off the whole thing. I don't know it perfectly off the top of my head, but I remember Jaren was getting interviewed and they asked him what his day-to-day was like and what, you know, his schedule is like the day they beat Utah. And he said something to the tune of, like, I woke up, I ate some cereal, and then Tyler and I, meaning obviously Tyler Algier, Tyler and I ran it down their damn throats. And I thought that was, like, one of my favorite BYU quotes of all time. It's not quite as good as Max Hall's interview after they beat Utah when he was like, I hate him, I hate everything about it. That's probably, like, the all-time greatest BYU speech. But that quote from Jaren really was, like, the icing on the cake for that week for me. And then to today, I mean, just the news cycle in the last like 15 minutes. I'm driving back to Provo right now from Vegas, scrolling through Twitter. Probably shouldn't while I'm driving, but that's all right. Anyways, like San Diego State just completely fumbling the bag, having to re-enter the Mountain West. We'll see if the Mountain West even lets them back. The Pac-12 media deal is the most atrocious PR like I've ever seen from like a multi-million dollar organization. And then the Big 12 just casually drops the fact that, oh, we're signing our deal today and executing, you know, our $30+ million deal with Fox and ESPN, both linear, obviously cable networks. I'm just having a great drive back to Provo. Normally, it's just barren desert. And I mean, I guess it is still barren desert, but the news cycle and just this convo has made it a lot more pleasurable.
Appreciate that. I'm not gonna, first of all, agree with everything you've just mentioned. I'm not gonna spend a ton of time talking about the Pac-12 cluster because we're in the middle of June and we still got a whole summer to talk about the perpetual Pac-12 deal that is always 3 weeks away. But the one thing I do want to touch on that you just mentioned is, can we just talk about how I love the pettiness of the Big 12 that now, like 15 minutes after the Pac-12 announces, oh yeah, we talked about general frameworks. We talked about, you know, significant linear pieces of like significant linear, what was it? Significant linear, whatever. Basically, it's a big nothing burger for the Pac-12 media deal today, even though it was announced, it was reported that like today was the day. Then like 15 minutes after that, Big 12 comes out and says, oh yeah, by the way, we signed our deal. We announced that like last October. We just want to remind you guys that like we're the stable conference here. Hunter, were you trying to say something?
Sure. Like it's so satisfying to just watch it unfold this way, where it's like, you know, we've been hearing for weeks and weeks and weeks about this Pac-12 deal and who, you know, what it's going to entail. Will they, won't they add San Diego State? And then a span of like 10 minutes, it's like, hey, yeah, like we met, we talked about a plan. And then like 5 minutes after that, it's like San Diego State is not going to leave the Mountain West Conference. 5 minutes after that, Big 12, you know, here's a little reminder of the deal that they signed. They've now executed it. I guess this was the phrase that Pete Thamel used. The Big 12 has signed and executed its long form television contract. So just kind of a good FU to the Pac-12 and kind of the news cycle it's been. But I agree, like we've got a long summer ahead of us with not a lot of BYU sports news that's going to be on the docket, and a lot of time to talk TV deals and Pac-12, will they, won't they, song and dance. Today was a nice little hour of fun as we watched it kind of not happen and then all the things come out afterwards. But as we enjoy the new Big 12 era of BYU football, I think that's just kind of a taste of what the conference is going to bring. Good TV deals, good moments, nice bragging rights for our Pac-12 friends. And it's just a nice to be on that side of the coin as opposed to being an independent and watching kind of from afar and watching from outside the arena. BYU now finds, well, I guess in a few hours from now, will find itself firmly in that arena as we get into the TV deals and the trash talking that goes on between conferences. It's just a lot of fun and a nice change.
I feel like this whole media deal thing that was brought up today, it's kind of like, it feels like just a movie where BYU is like the underdog that you're kind of rooting for the whole time. And then at the end, like it's the happy ending. Like they win, they get what they want. They get the girl, they rot off in the sunset. Like we're going to the Big 12. And then just whoever, like the antagonist of the film, just some like crazy outlandish cartoon ending, like falls off a cliff or like gets hit by a bus or something. And that's like the Pac-12 getting dragged into this by getting flexed on by Pete Thamel and San Diego State getting clowned just by everybody. Like it's just it's not like the focal point, but like you can't have a hero's journey without like the villain getting effed basically. And that's kind of what we saw today, and it was I'm all for it. I like the pettiness. I think you can throw out your Christ-like attributes today, except joy. You want to have joy for what's going on, but you can be a bit petty about
love it
putting down these people.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead.
I was just gonna say that Jackson threw out the antagonist ending, and I just had a picture in my mind of Syndrome just getting pulled into the jet turbine. Like that's like the Pac-12. That's what they're experiencing right now, is just that destructive ending. They try to ruin it for BYU, and here they are. They shouldn't have worn the cape of pride because it got stuck in the turbine, and now here they are. So appreciate the.
Can somebody make an edit of that and like put the U logo or the Pac-12 logo on Syndrome? Because that would be the best like Boney Fuller type thing ever.
For sure. Let's wait on that until it does come back that the media deal is like in the low 20s, and they're going to be scrambling to I guess, scrambling to figure out like what survival is going to look like for them. But I do kind of want to keep on that movie trend. Like movies ending, the happy song starts playing, and it goes through like what happens to each of the characters in their like happily ever after moment, like at the end of Remember the Titans. Kind of want to throw it out to the group, like what does that line read? Like, what do you predict the next, you know, let's say 5 to 10 years of BYU football, BYU sports, what does that look like now? Like, what does that tagline read?
If I can, I'll go first. I think it's going to look a lot like it's looked my entire time I've been a fan, which is just a resilient football team. Here we are on the cusp of the Big 12, and it's sending me back not only to the independence era, but to the Mountain West era. I mean, you think of all these guys that came before the, you know, Max Hall was mentioned, John Beck was mentioned, you had Zach Wilson, Taysom Hill, like defensive guys, Kyle Van Noy, the list just goes on and on, that played at a high enough level that one, you know, moving from the Mountain West, they felt like they could be independent and kind of keep growing that way rather than staying in the conference. And then the talent just continued to elevate until now, where here we are getting, you know, obviously at the brink of reaching our new home in the Power 5 conference. Like that's what I expect. Because that's what BYU's giving me forever. It's just this team, these fans, the team, players, coaches, like you name it, that are resilient and that find ways to win when maybe they shouldn't. I mean, Jackson, going back to what he said earlier, kind of that underdog mentality, but the underdog that just continues to find ways to win. And so that would be my line. Is, and BYU moved into the Big 12 and continued to find ways to win, because that's just kind of what they've done.
Yeah, I like what you said there. BYU's going to keep doing it's going to find ways to win. BYU's crafty, you know. It's BYU's the gym rat. I'm just going to list every stereotype for a white wide receiver, but just sneaky athleticism, right? But I think the big thing with the Big 12 is, obviously, if you follow me, you know that I'm like a diehard Redskins, Commanders, whatever you want to call them, fan, and to the point of tears. But Dan Snyder, if you're familiar with that at all, Dan Snyder sold, and it was this huge deal because he's kind of like the plague that's been put upon what could be a great franchise. And when he sells the team, it's like their entire future is going to change. Like their ceiling is going to change. Like there's hope, there's expectations. And kind of like in a less like sad, in a less like twisted way, because Dan Snyder had a lot of just weird stuff going on. Just that's a whole other thing. I could hop in other spaces and talk about that for hours. But BYU is going into the Big 12, and it's happier. There's a lot less independence. I feel like was just awkward. Like the WCC era was awkward. Like there were highs, there were lows. But at the end of the day, like there's a weird taste in your mouth where you have a team like the 2020 team that was so much fun, and they go 11-1, but that one loss really just bites them. Or the 2021 team, Pac-12 South champs, obviously, was such a fun season. But like, you win 10 games, the guy goes to Shreveport, and you're kind of just this. It's almost like an underground band that's like waiting to hit it big. Like BYU's getting its record deal. Like BYU's the band that's like has the passionate fan base. Like they have a few hits, but like they're still kind of under the radar. But now they're getting signed to a big record deal. They're going to be on all the charts. Like BYU's. Like what BYU ceiling is changing forever. Like what TCU did last year to go to the national title game. Like BYU could do that, not immediately, but like BYU can be that school that has the Power 5 label is just, it's a game changer. We're seeing it with the transfer portal. We're seeing it with recruiting. We're seeing it with just the narrative around BYU. Like BYU is no longer this obscure kind of like indie school, for lack of a better term. Like it's,
BYU. I mean, that is the term, right?
Like, yeah, well, literally yeah. School. but that's the thing. BYU has a seat at the table. Like, BYU doesn't have to be obscure. Like, this isn't like BYU is no longer the sleeper. Like, yeah, like BYU could crash the New Year's Six party. Like, we're not. It's not going to be crashing the New Year's Six party. Like, if they make it there, like, there, it's valid. Like, there's no arguments against BYU anymore. There's no, their schedule's weak. There's no, oh, Bo Diddley Tech, whatever. Like, it's BYU is legit. And it has been legit, but now everybody has to admit that BYU is legit.
Yeah, Jackson hit the nail on the head. Independence West Coast Conference, as we're throwing out metaphors, was like the perfect puberty stage for BYU, right? Like, you grew another foot and you had that 2020 season and you beat Tennessee and you beat USC and you also got acne and you lost to UMass and you went 5-7 and you lost at home to ECU, right? Like, there was the growing pains, but from it came, you know, new resources, new revenue streams. You got ESPN money. You opened up doors recruiting wise. Now you're you're through puberty. You're going off to college. You're entering the prime of your life. BYU is opening all these new doors. They're going off. Their dating pool or their recruiting pool is exponentially bigger, right? Like, you're not limited to the independent West Coast Conference resources. You can now go to the state of Texas and recruit there and sell kids on coming and playing in Provo. But being able to come back home and play in front of friends and family when you're playing at TCU or at Baylor, I just think it's such an exciting time to be a BYU fan. Jackson, you know, you mentioned it, and you're exactly right. BYU has always been pretty legit. You get legit wins here and there. You can compete on big stages, but it's no longer the sleeper team. It's no longer, you know, the surprise team. You know, we're in for probably a rough couple of years, but if BYU can continue to bring in more resources, bring in high-level recruits, you know, if A-Rod can continue to develop NFL quarterbacks, like, this is a BYU team where 2-3 years from now can be competing for Big 12 championships, right? Like, TCU, the first year of the college football playoff, was considered a team that was snubbed. They got leapfrogged by Ohio State because they competed in the Big 12 and they won the Big 12 and they, you know, people thought they should have gone to the playoffs. And here they were 8 years later going to the national championship and going to the playoffs. Like, and that's TCU. Like, while considered technically a sleeper, like, no one's surprised that a team like TCU can be able to put together years like that. So I think BYU can find themselves in a similar boat as they continue to take advantage of these Big 12 resources.
So what would you guys say is, like, BYU's ceiling in – so, I mean, it's hard to say because, like
– National champs, BYU, baby. I
love it. I mean, ideally, BYU is here in perpetuity. Like, I don't see BYU eventually all of a sudden becoming, like, a contender to go to the Big Ten or SEC. Like, if there's ever a split off between the two conferences, like, this is probably BYU's home for the foreseeable, if not indefinite, future. So it's hard to divvy it up, like, but let's just say 5 years from today, what is BYU's football program what look like? What's the ceiling on that?
My thought is this, like, the expectation there is going to be a lot of above average seasons, hopefully, right? Like, and the hope is that among one of those seasons, you're going to have a season where all the 50-50 games go your way. And that can be kind of that special year, that 2020 season minus the loss to Coastal Carolina coming up a yard short, that kind of thing. And then we'll actually get credit for it. Like Hunter said, we're no longer kind of the Cinderella story. We still can be to a degree, but we'll get a lot more credit for the wins, for the close wins that go our way. And so really exciting. Excited to see what happens there, but absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think ceiling is absolutely like playoff team, right? With the new college football playoff expansion, like, all you have to do is win the Big 12. But you're telling me that BYU can't put together a 2021, 2020-esque season and compete for a Big 12 championship and earn a playoff bid, like, within the first 5 years? Like, you're crazy. Like, with the NIL, with transfer portal, BYU can put together competitive rosters, you know, seemingly overnight as they take advantage of this new college football landscape. So with the new playoff rules, with NIL, with transfer portal, I think absolutely – BYU's ceiling is a playoff team in the first 5 years just because of how college football is set up now.
I mean,
no,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think playoff team like that, that's exactly right. Like, I'm not going to go ahead and say they're going to win a national title. My goggles aren't that blue. Maybe after tonight they will be, but like, a playoff team is not an unrealistic expectation, especially coming from the Big 12. Cause like, if you look at TCU, obviously, they got smacked in the natty. Like, well, we can talk about that. But before the national title game, if you look at their team statistics, they gave up – their defense was giving up 25 points a game. And BYU's gave up 29 last year. Now, obviously, TCU's offense was just a juggernaut. They forced more turnovers. They had more takeaways. But, like, I mean, a team like TCU that played very minimal defense, it seems, made it like they Cinderella'd their way to the national title game. And that's like, that's a reality for BYU now. And TCU made the national title game with one loss already. Like they lost in the conference title game and it didn't really hurt them. Obviously there was a lot of chaos throughout college football that kind of like helped them solidify that playoff spot. But like one loss for BYU every year and it's over. It's like, all right, well, we lost. We're playing in Shreveport. We're not going to play in a real bowl. Like, so it's just the ceiling has changed. And I think playing for a national championship legitimately, like going to the playoffs, is not out of the question. TCU's kind of established there's a path forward for that. And at BYU, no, magic happens. Like Austin Cawley said it. And this is, it's been a magical, I mean, we've seen the magic already, beating Utah the day after getting the Big 12 invite. Who's to say that there isn't some magic for the first season in the Big 12? I mean, I don't want to like make any predictions, but it's just going to be such a fun ride. Like Hunter said, playoff team completely on the table. Not right away, but BYU can grow to that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I listening to you guys talk about like the ceiling is the playoff. Like at first it's jarring because I'm used to the playoff just being like, you know, four at large teams, and that might be a little bit tall task, but like, do I think BYU can grow into have a top 12 year in the next 5 years? Like I think that's definitely on the table. Like it's not an unrealistic thing, especially considering two of the last 3 years, BYU has been the 13th best team in the country when those selections came around. Like for me, it doesn't seem like a stretch. Once you get those resources in, once you get that Big 12 recruiting bump, and once you factor in the transfer portal, I think BYU can absolutely, I'm with you guys. Like, I think BYU can absolutely grow into at least a playoff appearance. I'm not ready to say yet that BYU is going to win the Big 12 in the next 5 years, but can they get an at-large spot? Can they like flirt with that conversation? I absolutely think so. And like, even from like, we'll transition to independence here in a second, but like looking forward just from a recruiting perspective, I think BYU is an attractive enough place where I think BYU can have a top 30 recruiting class in the next fight. In 5 years, I think BYU can get to that point. We're already seeing it pay off big dividends, especially in the transfer portal world. I think BYU, what is like the 21st ranked transfer portal class in the country right now. That I think that only gets better from a high school recruiting perspective. So let's kind of switch gears a little bit to more of the New Orleans style funeral of the independence era. How would you guys, in summation, view the independence era for BYU? Was it a success? Was it a failure? Or was it just kind of, did it just kind of happen?
Without a doubt, it was a success. Like, you got primetime windows. Well, I guess technically not primetime, but you got like solo windows on ESPN where your brand was front and center for, you know, the entire country to watch BYU play, both home games and road games. You got to play in stadiums like the Coliseum, at Nebraska, you know, Michigan State, Tennessee. You played Baylor. Like, you played these top teams in some of the top venues across the country. You grew your coaching staff. You grew your resources. You became, you know, not just this niche Mountain West Mormon school, but it was truly a school that became known on a broader, wider basis just because of, you know, they played coast to coast each and every week. It was at a new spot in a different region, you know, states that BYU had never played in before, teams that they had never played before. You know, and the alternative really for BYU to independence was staying in the Mountain West. And if BYU had stayed in the Mountain West, would they be in the Big 12 now? Would they have gotten the invite? What would the last, you know, 13 years look like in the Mountain West competing against Utah State, Boise State, and San Diego State? Like, who knows what inevitably would have ended up happening? But I could say with a surety, looking back, the independence era for BYU football was absolutely a success.
I'm not, like, call me crazy. I'm not sure you can argue that it was anything but a success. Like, If you went back to the goals of independence, when BYU did go independent, what were the goals? To get more exposure. That happened. Like, BYU was playing on ESPN pretty much every single week. You know, I can't, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think when you can, when you stacked him up against Pac-12 teams, I think BYU would have been the third or fourth most watched Pac-12 team in 2022. So like from an exposure perspective, like you got P5 level exposure just by going independent. If you look at it in terms of like going and playing, you know, coast to coast, like BYU did that. If even if you look at it in terms of like increasing your national relevance, I'd argue that BYU accomplished that goal with those 2020 and 2021 seasons. BYU was in that discussion to be in a New Year's Six game during those seasons. And they did it with, at least in 2021, they did it with a tougher schedule that they wouldn't have been able to have if had they, you know, stayed in the Mountain West Conference. So I think, I'm not sure there's, I don't know if any of you guys can make it, and I'm not sure if any of you guys will make it because we're all rabid BYU fans, but like independence worked. And the ultimate goal of like getting BYU into a Power Five conference, like that happened. We're on the cusp of that happening, you know, tonight at midnight. So like, I know there were a lot of, there were at least some go back to the Mountain West folks. Like, I'm not sure how that, like, I'm not sure if there's a leg to stand on that anymore, except for maybe that, you know, BYU gets maybe an at-large bid to go to a New Year's Six game at some point in the last 12 years. But I'm willing to sacrifice a New Year's Six bid in order for BYU to get the, you know, the exposure, the money, the success that it's had in the last 12 years. Any like Chandler, Jackson, you guys want to comment on that?
Yeah, I wide exposure.
Sorry,
played Jackson, a huge role.
You're breaking up a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just kind of summing up what both of you guys said, like hopping on the back of the like. If you looked at what BYU was trying to accomplish in independence, they did everything they set out to do. And independence was a necessary sacrifice in order to receive a Power Five invite. Like, you can't really argue that, looking at the Mountain West, looking at the alternatives. And there were moments where I lost faith in independence. I didn't want to go to the Mountain West per se, but I just was frustrated about what kind of the ceiling was, what was going on. But like these 13 years of independence were absolutely necessary to get to the Big 12 because it showed BYU had a nationwide audience. It showed BYU's value because BYU banked on itself. And it worked out really well. And, you know, those games at Tennessee, at Wisconsin, they came to Virginia a few times or once or twice maybe. Like, just all over the country, BYU went and proved its value. And it was kind of inspiring. And even though, like, you can look at wins and losses and maybe NFL draft picks, and it's kind of ticked up over the past few years, but it wasn't super impressive on that note. Just, like, what independence did for BYU, you can't really quantify that. The end result of ending in the Big 12 is what will kind of define independence for me, which is it put BYU as a national power on the map and made sure people knew that BYU belonged in the Power Five conference. Like, BYU is going to the Big 12 and no one can dispute that. Like, when BYU went to the Big 12, like, aside from people who had roses in their bios on Twitter, people just kind of generally accepted it. It seemed like it was important. Like, it mattered. BYU deserved it. And that was because of independence. So independence, yeah, like, you can't be, like, it was a mixed bag at times, but at the end of the day, it worked, and that's what matters most.
I mean, there's definitely drawbacks to it, right? Like, it kind of, obviously, like, playing nobody in November, like, senior days being against, you know, the Utah States and Dixie States and of the world, like, it kind of sucks, like, when that's what you have to look forward to down the stretch, and especially the bowl games definitely kind of sucked. But like, I think that was a necessary sacrifice to get BYU to where they needed to go. And at the end of the day, like, I don't, even if had BYU had stayed in the Mountain West and like won a Mountain West title or a few of those over the last 10 years, like, I don't think that improves BYU stock as a program really at all. I don't think any of us here besides like Boise State can name who won, like, can any of you guys name who won the pack, like the Mountain West title last year? Because I don't think I can.
That was quite the mic drop there. That's pretty damning for the Mountain West.
Regardless, I mean, we can talk about basketball. Like, I'd argue maybe, and Hunter would probably agree with me, that the WCC was maybe a failure. Going to the WCC, like, we sacrificed our basketball program in order to get our football program where it needed to go. And I think that kind of sucks. I think every other sport at BYU has done pretty well, I would say, in the WCC. I mean, being in a conference with Gonzaga definitely helped BYU back a little bit. But what do you think, Hunter?
Yeah, I don't think there's any maybe about it. I think BYU basketball in the West Coast Conference was absolutely a failure. I mean, you look at what they were doing in the lead up to that year, right? Like, obviously, you had the Jimmer years. You were 32-5 the last year in the Mountain West Conference. You were 30-6 the year before that. You know, you had been coming off, I think it was something like 8 straight years. Or 7 straight years of single-digit losses in men's college basketball. You had won Mountain West Conference regular season championships. You had been going to the NCAA tournament in 6 straight seasons, and then you go to the West Coast Conference and immediately fall off, and you start losing double-digit games, 12 losses in 2012, 12 losses the next year, 10 losses, 11, 12 losses, 13 losses, 15 losses this last season. You don't have a single West Coast Conference championship to show for it, either regular season or tournament championship to show for it. Unfortunately, you know, like we talk about all the good things that BYU football was able to accomplish in their independence era, I think the exact opposite probably you could say about BYU basketball and their failure to succeed in the West Coast Conference. And, like, yeah, Gonzaga, it was a big part of that. Like, it's hard to win a conference with Gonzaga playing in it. But, like, let's not forget where we were at in 2011 when BYU first left the Mountain West Conference to go to the West Coast Conference. Like, BYU had beaten Gonzaga in the conference or in the NCAA tournament, Jimmer's senior year, to go to the Sweet 16. BYU was the better program at that time. And I think it was definitely not out of the question to expect BYU to compete with Gonzaga as they moved into the West Coast Conference. So to have no conference championships, to have a slew of double-digit loss seasons, just kind of sucks that that was the reality. Obviously, who knows, like, if there was an NCAA tournament in 2020 and COVID hadn't canceled that, if our tune would be any different, because BYU looked to have a pretty good team that year and they had beaten Gonzaga. But, yeah, I think absolutely there's kind of no maybe about it. I would say the West Coast Conference era for BYU men's basketball was a failure.
I guess let's get back to a happier note.
Sorry, was that too downer? I don't know. I was just.
I mean, it is a funeral after all.
That was the sad part of the funeral. Let's get back to the celebration.
Best. I mean, do we want to do this year by year, or do we just, like, best moments from the independence era?
I mean, I want, like, to open it up to the people who have been in the listening, in the room listening. I want to hear from, the fans and the listeners what their favorite moment of either the West Coast Conference era for, all of BYU's Olympic sports and basketball, or their favorite moment of the independence era for football was. So I don't know how it works, Joe. Do you call on people? Do they raise their hands?
They can request, and then I can accept their request. Don't be shy, everyone.
If you want to share with us your favorite moment, West Coast Conference Independence Era, request to be a speaker, and Joe will pick it on you to talk.
All right. Let's see. Braden, you are on.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Cool. I just wanted to push back a little bit on the men's basketball. I guess this isn't my favorite. Is it okay if I can push back on the men's basketball?
Braden, you can push back as much
okay.
as you
want. I just think, like, I guess I don't know if this is 100% true, but the last conference tournament win for basketball was 2001, I want to say. And so I just think, like, how many of us actually knew the teams in the West Coast Conference when we joined it, and the fact that BYU is still, like, semi-relevant, which I guess to your point, Hunter, is like, okay, we should have, like, blown through the conference, but also Gonzaga had a generational, like, run. So I don't know. I just think like it was so hard to get recruits, and the fact that BYU had like even good years, like you said, the killer is just the 2020 tournament being canceled. Like if you have that tournament run and you go to the Elite Eight, everyone looks back at, or even the Sweet 16, everyone looks back and says, oh, they got as far as Jimmer got, and that's like the best basketball success we've had in the last 20 years. So I don't know. I just think the fact that BYU basketball is still relevant and going into the best basketball conference in the country, and like we might not be great, but we've like tread water in the fact in such a horrible conference, frankly. I don't know. I think that's like decently respectable because it's so hard to get recruits in that conference. So that's my two cents on the basketball. I get the other side of it, but just like, I don't know. I think we should look at it a little more like football. Like we weren't great in independence era in football. Like we had Zach and Jaron in those 2 years, but also like if we see the football as a success when we went 7-5 every other year, we probably should give basketball a little bit more credit. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
I think you're, I mean, you're definitely onto something. Like BYU in reality, like if you put BYU basketball in terms of like where football was, I think BYU was what, an 8-4, 9-4 type team throughout the independence era. I would say BYU's probably about that. Like they won 20 games a year.
Yeah.
So it's not like BYU basketball fell off to like where they were like in the pre-Steve Cleveland days back in the 90s.
True.
And I think there's a lot of other factors, like how is the LDS basketball talent? BYU doesn't have like a natural athletic pool to choose from unless it's just like the Haas brothers in basketball. So there's a lot of different factors besides just the conference that BYU is in. I think the one difference between like football being a success versus basketball being a success is at least there were some super fun moments in the football world. Like you had those wins against Tennessee, you had, you know, those two wins against Texas. You had these moments in the independence era that were like iconic BYU moments. And I think BYU, in terms of basketball, I'd argue they only really had two, when they spoiled Gonzaga's undefeated season and when they beat Gonzaga in 2020, you know?
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. I get that. And so I think there's two sides of the coin. Like, hey, it sucked, but like, I don't know, we survived. But at the same time, I think going to your initial question of favorite moments was 2020 Gonzaga, like, I don't know, top 2-3 basketball game in the Marriott Center of all time. And then, I would probably say the Utah-Arizona State weekend back-to-back. Big 12 Utah-Arizona State in 2021 for football. That was like, I don't know, that was amazing. So back to your initial question.
That's a great answer, because it wasn't just like beating Utah was awesome, but then to go back and validate it the next week.
Yeah.
BYU has a history in their football program of they'll beat like one good team at the beginning of the year, or at least a team that's slated to be a really good team that ends up falling off at the end of the year. But very rarely would they beat two. And so I think the fact that BYU not only beat Utah, which was a huge moment, you could chalk that up to like, oh, it was just an emotional, it was an emotional moment. Like BYU wasn't going to lose in that moment. But then to follow that up with, you know, what I would argue was like as good of a win, if not more exciting, was beating Arizona State that next week and causing all those false starts. Like, you're right, it was truly awesome moment as a BYU fan that I don't think I'll ever forget either.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what you guys were talking about earlier with the ceiling, like those 2 years, I think we feel so much better about football moving into the Big 12 with those 2 years. Like, tough to recruit in independence. We pull those two years off. Two NFL quarterbacks. Like, I don't know. Just gets me stoked. Stoked for the Big 12.
And now we have a defensive coordinator.
Braden brings up a very interesting point, actually, that I really appreciate. It's, like, sneaky impressive how, A, unique that Arizona State win was just in, you know, BYU's history. Because if you think of other like key pivotal moments of the BYU, not only just like the independence era, but the fan experience, it seems like there's always a big, exciting win that's followed up with a big letdown period immediately afterwards, right? Like you talk about BYU upsetting Oklahoma in 2009 with Max Hall, and then you turn around and you get walloped by Florida State, right? Like even if you look at big wins of the independence era, BYU beats top 25 USC at home in overtime. And then they turn around and they lose to Washington at home. They get smacked. Then they lose to Toledo, and then they lose to South Florida. Like it's very few and far between are the moments where BYU has a big emotional win and turns around and can keep that momentum going. So I think, you know, Braden is exactly right. The fact that BYU was able to beat Utah and get invited to the Big 12 in the same weekend and same 48 hours and turn around and keep that momentum going and beat Arizona State at home is pretty incredible.
No, I'm totally with you. And I think, and another great point Braden made is that season gave me confidence that BYU could survive in the Big 12. Like moving up to the Power 5 conference level, like years and years and years of just going, you know, 7-6, 9-4, 8-5, like all of those seasons stacked up on top of each other in the independence era, it kind of felt like BYU had hit a ceiling a little bit. And so to be able to break through that ceiling in two straight years, not just having, you know, the 2020 season where they won 11 games, they dominated everybody except teams they played on 3 days notice. That was awesome. But then again, to validate that and follow that up with another 10-win season where you did, you know, beat five Pac-12 teams, you went undefeated against the Pac-12, you went 6-1, you know, a season after, like BYU's never had that kind of success against Power 5 opponents in their history. They've never had a season like that. I'd have to go back and check, but like I'm not sure there's very many seasons where they had a winning record against Pac-12 teams, or sorry, against Power 5 teams. But the fact that, you know, they did that with independence recruiting, with an independent schedule, it definitely gives me a lot more, I don't want to say comfort, but like security that BYU, even though last year, you know, last year was what last year was, BYU going forward can compete at that level, especially once they get more resources, better recruiting, that kind of stuff.
Well, and if I can add to that, average to below average defenses both of those years. Like the beginning of the independence era was like dominant defenses, Kyle Van Noy, Ziggy. I mean, like Kyle Van Noy won that bowl game, I think it was bowl game against San Diego State. You put the defense from the early independence era with the offenses of the later independence era. I mean, I don't know. Like those are just some of the two most dominant defense offense combos, which like you said, with BYU has a defensive coordinator, like you just need one year. You need one TCU year and you can make the playoff, especially with their 12 spots being available.
I mean, it's a fun hypothetical game to play, right? Like, could you imagine that 2012 defense with that 2020 offense, or even the 2021 offense? Like, just nasty. Like, it's And the thing is like, I think that is more possible going forward. Like, that year is still ahead of BYU rather than behind BYU. Again, because of the resources that the Big 12 can offer, because of, you know, the better recruiting, I think. Like BYU's best days as a football program are definitely ahead of them, but appreciate that, Braden.
Yeah. Thanks guys.
Anyone else, give us your best moments of the independence era. Give me, favorite players of the independence era. Share your happiest moments with us. And while we wait for someone, Chandler, what was your favorite? Oh, let's see. Coop Connect. Let's go. Our boy, Jake Brandon. What's up, brother?
Jake.
Hey, guys. Thanks for giving me a second here. I'm hesitant to jump on and talk sometimes. Sometimes I don't stop talking. But I have to say, like, in, was it 2021, when we kind of came back and clutched up on that final drive against USC, with Jackson Dart there. I was in that stadium, and it was like pretty much a whole BYU crowd the whole time. Then they got ahead, and they got some momentum, and they started a chant that was less than favorable. And then they had that drive. We had the drive where Jackson McChesney scored to go give us the lead again. And they got kind of quiet and nervous. But as they were marching down the field, their confidence was back up. And just walking out of that stadium, with, I mean, there was probably only 8,000 people at that game, but walking out of that stadium with 8,000 USC guys who had just like done that chant and had kind of like dunked on all the BYU fans that were there, it was pretty awesome. And then we, you know, we clinched our 2021 Pac-12 champs with that game as well. So I put that as one of my highlights.
Yeah, I love it. For me personally, I think my mind goes to a lot of those moments that would have never happened had we stayed in the Mountain West. For the, some of those for me would be like Taysom, like getting Texas's defensive coordinator fired. Like those are things that got us a lot of exposure, you know, the ESPN top 10, all that. Also thinking, yeah, of course, of the Pac-12 championship that we rightfully earned. A lot of those moments beating Tennessee in dramatic fashion, that one stands out a lot. Didn't seem like we had a hope there. And then just the absolute prayer from Zach Wilson to was it Micah Simon down the field. And just those moments that would have never happened had we not taken that chance of going into Independence, and to feel that it's paid off now, make those seem all the more worth it.
No, I'm definitely with you. Like, I mean, it's funny that like a lot of our favorite memories are the more recent ones in the Independence era, especially, I mean, that 2021 season has to be the best, at least like, I don't know. Do you guys agree with me? Like, would the 2021 season be the best season of the Independence era?
I would say so. I mean, obviously 2020, better record, Zach popped off, but like that, just the COVID cloud and not having fans in the stands, that takes a lot off for me. I'm biased. I was on my mission then, so I wasn't really watching the games obediently.
Dang, you are a baby.
Yeah, but also, I mean, they didn't play the scale of opponents is just not the same. I mean, beating Utah versus beating Western Kentucky is like, come on.
I mean, it's a shame, right? Like, I would argue that the 2021 team or the 2020 team was the better team, but the 2021 season was the better season.
I think that's a
very fair argument. I would agree with that.
I think it's a fair and the correct argument. Yeah. Like, I think if you put the two rosters against each other in a game, the 2020 team would win. But, like, it's hard to say, like, you know, like Jackson and Jake were saying, like, in what world is, like, a UTSA, Western Kentucky, Louisiana Tech wins better than USC, Utah, Arizona State?
I mean, if you look at it this way, BYU did beat two Power 5 teams that season in Houston and UCF, and they dismantled both of them. So I guess we can make that argument if we really want to as of tomorrow.
Calvin, and I will make that argument.
I'm not going to make the argument as well that the 2019 season was better, but there certainly were a lot of moments, like storming the field against Boise State and against USC at home certainly had – that was quite a nice moment for a lot of BYU fans as well.
Oh yeah, every year of independence had at least one moment where you're just like, oh yeah, this was awesome. Calvin, let's hear your thoughts.
First off, I'm not sure 2017 had an awesome moment, so I would say there was one year of independence.
No. I'm pushing back. Put some respect on Braden Albakri's name.
Okay, all right. I'll give you that.
You got the name wrong the first time.
Well, actually, you know, the moment that stands on my mind is the season after that 2017. Debacle, and I go to that bowl game. You know, it's just the famous Idaho bowl game, and they're just playing Western Michigan. It shouldn't be a memorable game by any stretch of the definition, but this is to me the moment that we realized that Zach Wilson could really find a place on the Mount Rushmore of BYU quarterbacks. And we're talking 18 for 18 passing, 300 and somewhat yards. I don't know what the efficiency was. The efficiency was probably like 500. I wouldn't be surprised. And then, of course, you know, the next season he has that injury-plagued season, and it's really 2020 that everything comes, you know, roundabout. But I definitely go back to that bowl game. It's the season after that terrible 2017 season. So just any bowl game would have been great. And just seeing Zach Wilson in embryo before he became one of the all-time greats was a special moment for me.
That, yeah, I'm with you. Like, that Zach Wilson perfect bowl game is like a sneaky under the radar moment of independence. To have a quarterback go in, freshman quarterback bowl game be perfect, I think it was kind of set the stage for what the tail end of independence would be like with Zach Wilson at the helm and, you know, kind of the resurgence. Cause like you said, like 4-9 in 2017, right? In 2018, you come in, you start the year with Tanner Mangum, things aren't looking great. And then you put Zach in that Hawaii game. And for, over the course of the rest of the season, you win 4 of your next 7 to get bowl eligible. And then Zach has that perfect bowl game. And I think that kind of set the expectations and set the stage for what would eventually happen in 2019, 2020, and 2021. And
it could be argued that game is the reason why Kalani Sitake is still head coach at BYU. If BYU loses that bowl game following that 2017 season, who knows how that completely changes the trajectory of where the program is today. So, yeah, very underrated moment in the independence era for me.
Yeah, if I could hop on that, that Kalani thought, 2018 season, obviously, like, a step up from 2017. Wasn't really hard to do that, but some impressive moments. Seeing Zach Wilson ball out of the bowl game kind of gave you confidence that the program had there was a plan forward at quarterback for the next few years. 2018, that was my freshman year. I was living in the dorms. Fun season for me, obviously. But that Wisconsin game kind of gets lost in the shuffle, I feel like, with the recent – with Utah, with Baylor. I mean, BYU went on the road and beat a top 10 team. And obviously, Wisconsin did not finish as well as they were expected to. But that was – for me, that was my moment where I was like, all right, Kalani can do no wrong. This is the guy. BYU went in that whole jump around thing in the fourth quarter. They had their swagger. That was my man Gavin in here. Gavin with the hold of the year for the last field goal, game saving play right there. But that was like for BYU to be as underwhelming as they were the year before, to go in to Camp Randall, historic stadium, going to Big Ten country, win that game. I mean, that was a magical experience. That really. For me, like, I was up and down on Kalani the first 2 years as he was kind of getting his sea legs as head coach. It was a growing experience. But that Wisconsin game was like, I knew Kalani was the guy going forward. And then you pair that with Zach in the bowl game, and you're like, okay, like, BYU's got its coach. It's got its quarterback ready to go. And, I mean, look what's happened since then. It's been nothing but – I mean, not nothing but good times, but a lot of good times that – I mean, did we ever expect – to have a quarterback like Zach Wilson do what he did? Did we ever expect to see what Tyler Allgeier did? Did we ever expect to be just as nationally relevant and do the things that BYU has done these past few years? No, but it's been amazing. And yeah, that Wisconsin game for me was a critical moment to set up these past few seasons of success.
First of all, great reference with the game-winning hold from Gavin Fowler. Just textbook BYU historian right there.
Special teams wins championships, man. Can't forget that.
No, you love to see it. So what I'm kind of doing right now is like, if any of you guys want to filibuster, I'm trying to like come up with a list of, because you brought up a great point with Wisconsin, like going into Camp Randall, like that iconic stadium, and pulling off that upset. Has got to be, you know, one of the top BYU moments of all time, just because of the history of that stadium, you know, top 10 team coming off, you know, the previous season. Wisconsin beat BYU 40-6, and to come back that next year after that 4-7 season, and it was just like, it was a great sign of the direction the program was heading, that, you know, no more of the days were going to get pushed around. Like, Wisconsin became that benchmark for, okay, how physical are we going to be as a program? And then BYU came in that next year and pushed Wisconsin around, to your point. Like, definitely, I don't know, top 5 win of the independence era. Am I too bold to say top 3?
Probably not top 3, but I like where your head's at.
It's a day of exaggerations, to be sure.
Every win of the independence era is a top 3 win today.
Yes. There were no bad losses, all great wins.
Yeah, that UNLV win in 2017 was a real – got to hang your hat on that one.
Hey, man, again, I'm hanging my hat on that Hawaii win at the end of the season.
Joe Critchlow, GOAT. That's my GOAT.
all-time great. All right, again, throw that. Let's, Tanner, let's hear from you, man. As he gets scheduled to join in. You with us, Tanner?
Oh, hey, sorry. The mic was being weird. Yeah, no, just really quickly, I just wanted to say that I never thought that this day would come, that BYU would get into a P5 conference, but it's here and it's awesome. And I would say probably my favorite moment in Independence, I have to go back to 2011 against UCF. So I got to go to that game. And it was, if you guys remember, it was the week after the 54-10 beatdown from Utah. And part of me didn't want to go because UCF, even in 2011, they were somewhat decent. And I kind of thought that BYU was going to get trucked again. But I decided to go. And when we got to the stadium, I was kind of surprised how full it was, especially after what happened the previous week. And the game itself was a whole lot of fun. If you guys remember, you know, Cody Hoffman had that 93-yard kickoff return. I'm spacing names right now, but I think Cal Van Noy, I think he had like a game-clinching sack in that game. I remember the BYU offense was still somewhat anemic. If you guys remember, that was Jake Heaps and Brandon Doman and those guys. But overall, it was just a fun game. The kickoff return, there was a muff punt. UCF muffed a punt. BYU got some key turnovers. UCF, they missed a field goal, if I remember correctly. It was just a really fun, exciting game. And even though, like, BYU, they finished 10-3 in 2011, I know that schedule was somewhat weak. But yeah, you know, that, I would say, like, that was probably my favorite moment in all of Independence. And the last thing I'll say is probably, like, my favorite season. It has to go probably be 2021, mainly because if you guys remember, like a good chunk of that year, BYU, they were in contention for a New Year's Six Bowl, even all the way up until like November. And that was pretty rare for me to see. And unfortunately they didn't get in, but the fact that they were in the conversation week in and week out was a lot of fun. So anyway, yeah, you know, those are just my thoughts. BYU's going to a P5 conference. It's great.
Love it, man. Appreciate that. All right. I think we lost. I guess we lost Gavin. We'll see if we can get him back on. One thing I wanted to – another thing I kind of wanted to highlight, going back to one of the previous comments about, like, just, like, the road games on the Independence schedule were awesome. Like, I'm just going to read off a list of the team, like, some of the teams that BYU beat just on the road. During the Independence era, they went and beat Ole Miss at Ole Miss, Georgia Tech, Texas, Nebraska, Michigan State, Wisconsin, USC, and Stanford. Like, that is a fantastic list of wins. Oh, I didn't even mention Tennessee in that 2019 season. Like, those are some iconic stadiums and programs that BYU went in and beat on their home, like on their own home field. I'm not sure it gets any better than that. And I think that's kind of the point of Independence as a whole, is that BYU has always been, from the day Lavelle Edwards stepped on campus to now, BYU has been that program that we're going to go to any team, anytime, anywhere, and we're going to beat you guys on your home field. And even if we don't, we're going to give you guys a hell of a game. Like, just as a fan, like, we can talk all we want about, not having anything to cheer for in late November, but like, we had some awesome things to cheer for in the meantime with just those iconic moments that I'll cherish as a fan forever.
Not even just like the programs that you beat on the road, but just like the places you played. Like, if you were to go through, like, they weren't always wins. They weren't even always against like the best teams, but like NFL stadiums, just that BYU was able to play in during their time in Independence. You played, you know, and at the Dallas Cowboys Stadium against TCU, you know, AT&T Stadium. You played at Reliant Stadium in Houston, the stadium for the Houston Texans. You played at FedEx Field against West Virginia. You played at Gillette Stadium in Boston against UMass. Like, there's just, Raymond James Stadium in Tampa against USF. Like, just off the top of my head, five NFL stadiums that BYU was able to play in and visit during their time in Independence, on top of, you know, those insanely famous college venues against those top programs too. Like, it just was kind of, you know, a BYU fans, you know, there's a lot of BYU fans out there that make it their goal to go to an away game every single season. And Independence just had to be the dream for those fans because of all the cool places BYU was able to go and play.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's a big reason why BYU is going to the Big 12 now. I think in this last decade of Independence, conferences and ESPN, I think the whole nation saw just how big the BYU brand was and how many BYU fans would show up no matter what game it was. And I do feel like it really impressed the nation. It was cool to see.
Love it, man. Appreciate it, Tanner. Okay, let's kind of switch gears from just like individual games. Let's kind of select our all-independence team for BYU. I mean, we have a lot of speakers on here right now, but let's just throw it out. Best quarterback of the independence era, and why is it Jaren Hall? I'm just kidding. Anyone who listens to our podcast knows I'm a Jaren Hall stan to the day I die. But I mean, it's a worthwhile argument. Is it Zach? Is it Taysom? Or is it Jaren?
For best quarterback,
like it's Zach. Like you're all independence team. Who's QB1? First team all independence.
Zach. 100%. I know you're a Jaren guy. I'm a Jaren guy. I love Jaren, but Zach Wilson just like was a better quarterback. He was, you know, the number two draft pick, overall draft pick, the highest, you know, pick in the draft for a BYU player. Absolutely, I would have to say Zach is your QB1 on the all-independence team.
I might surprise you guys with this. I think Jaren is probably third team behind Taysom.
I'd put Jaren 2 ahead of Taysom.
I guess, don't get me wrong.
I love me some Taysom. I think his NFL success has kind of changed BYU's outlook on Taysom. Like, let's not forget when people were chanting for Tanner Mangum to replace Taysom Hill in that 2016 season.
So the argument that I'll make for Taysom is that the wins that Taysom had were iconic. His issue obviously was always health. But, like, neither Zach nor Jaren ever put 80 points up on Texas in 2 years. Like, obviously Taysom had his limitations throwing the football, especially in college, and we were robbed to see him against, in that 2015-2014 season. But, like, that 2014 season, he was a dark horse to win the Heisman that season. Like, again, the wins and the moments that Taysom had – I think we're better than any quarterback in the independence era. I think that's also like when you just look at it from a wins perspective, I think that's where Zach probably falls a little bit short. What was his record against Power Five teams? Like, did he beat any? USC, Tennessee, who else?
USC and Tennessee off the top of my head, I have to go back through other ones.
Either way, like Zach thrived against lesser competition, and against that lesser competition, I'm not sure BYU has had a better quarterback since, you know, Ty Detmer back in 1990. But I think that's the one thing I'll push back on Zach, is just that the wins weren't quite as good.
I hear that argument. My tiebreaker is, because I think it's close, I think it's super close between Zach and Jaren personally, in at least my book. My tiebreaker is talking with people who were on both of those teams and asking them who was better, Jaren or Zach. And I think every single person I've asked, and I'll keep them anonymous, they don't hesitate to say that Zach is the better of the two quarterbacks from just a pure skill standpoint. So in my mind, when you have guys who played with both who say Zach's better, like, that's going to be the tiebreaker for me and why I would put Zach ahead. But I definitely hear the argument in terms of, if you're just looking at on the field stuff, it's hard to argue that Jaren had better wins. But I think just body of work, skill. Zach obviously doing something that no BYU quarterback had really ever done before in terms of draft status. I'd have to give the edge to Zach.
Okay, moving on to running back. Tyler Allgeier or Jamal Williams?
Jamal.
Chandler, what say you?
I think Tyler. I mean, I think he still holds the record for a single season in a lot of different aspects. So I'd probably go with Tyler at his peak.
Hey, I got a little bit of unique insight into this one. I had Jamal Williams in my studio shortly after Tyler Allgeier declared that he was going to the draft. And he said, I'm kind of relieved because I think he would have embarrassed me as a contender for one of the greatest running backs of all time if he got another shot at it. So even in Jamal, he was who's a pretty confident guy, full swagger. Even he was kind of given Tyler the nod there. The kid was pretty dang special.
I think I got to go with Tyler as well.
Guys.
Jamal is
the all-time leading rusher in BYU history. He has 1,000 more rushing yards than Tyler did.
But Tyler was only the guy for 2 years.
But don't you have to look at total body of work?
I mean,
single season, then the all-time guy in 1 year is Tyler for all purpose yards.
But that's the thing is I'm saying you got to look at the total body of work, right? Like if you're going to knock Zach because he played the lesser competition and put up a lot of his numbers in that 2020 season, wouldn't the same thing be said for Tyler, who benefited from that 2020 season while Jamal was playing more
difficult? If we're talking about whole body of work,
Hunter,
if we're talking about whole body of work, Tyler has more touchdowns than Jamal. Granted, it's only by one, but it's in significantly fewer games. So you can't just look at only the total number of yards as total body of work. You have to look at all the stats, and it definitely bodes for Tyler if you do that.
Tyler did it against tougher competition in 2021. Like I know the 2020 season was some inflated stats, but that 2021 season was probably the best season of any running back in BYU history, except maybe Luke Staley.
But you're gonna tell me that the guy who has the BYU career record for rushing yards is you're gonna put him second on the all independence team? Like for me, I just can't do that. Like I get like the touchdowns, I get he has the single season stuff, but like your running back is supposed to run for yards. Like that's the job of the running back. And Jamal did it better than anybody has ever done it for a BYU career. For me, it's tough to say BYU's all time leading rusher is not on the all independent team.
I mean, in terms of like iconic running backs, like when I think of BYU independence era, which running back do I think of? It's probably Jamal because he was there for so long. That said, like not only was Tyler great in college, he went in his first season in the NFL and ran for 1,000 yards. Like, and again, what Tyler did against Virginia in 2021, what he did against USC, what he did against Utah and Arizona State. Like, man, he was just awesome. Like, and he was as physical of a runner as Jamal. I don't know if he was faster, but either way, blessed to have all three. Blessed to have both. Wide receiver. Who's your all-independent first-team wide receiver?
Do we pick one or three? What personnel are we running here?
One. We're picking one. We don't have the time to pick three.
Again, if I'm going with my logic for Jamal Williams, I got to go with the logic here and say Cody Hoffman.
Yes.
My thought as well. Hoffman would be mine.
That I agree.
Dude, it's hard to knock anything on
Hoffman.
Like
you could say maybe like Dax had a better single season. Like that 2020 season was better than any single year Cody had, but –
it's I don't know, man. Cody was like
a QB play into that too, though.
Cody was like the entire offense and had catching balls below his knees consistently. I
could have no respect for Cody. No disrespect to Riley Nelson, but the fact that Cody Hoffman is BYU's all-time leading receiver with Riley Nelson as the quarterback says a lot about Cody Hoffman.
Absolutely. I mean, there hasn't been, like, maybe Austin. I think it's 1A and 1B, Austin, Cody, and the order can be debated there. But obviously Austin didn't play in Independence, so you have to go Cody as the number one wide receiver of Independence era.
Yeah, dude, even Dax Milne, looking at the stats, where's Dax Milne's sports reference page? Yeah, dude, that 2012 season by Cody, his stat line was 100 catches, 1,200 yards, 11 touchdowns. And Dax in 2020 was 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns on 70 catches. Like,
and Cody caught 40% of his passes outside his natural catch radius probably too. So,
oh my gosh, he was so good. That catch he had against Georgia Tech is probably the best play I've ever seen live. Like the best athletic play I think I've ever seen from a BYU player live, except for maybe the Tyler Alger punch out. Offensive line. Center, probably James Empey. I mean, pretty much, I think you can take that entire offensive line from 2021 and say that's your all Big 12 offensive line. Or that's your all independent offensive line.
It would be pretty tough to beat that one.
Chandler?
Kuluma has got to get a mention. Guys, Kuluma?
T. John
Kuluma, thank you. He's listed at 6 foot. I've seen him in real life multiple times. He's lucky he's 5'10", but it's like all muscle. So to compensate for the lack of height that offensive linemen need to have and be, frankly, as dominant in one-on-one blocking as Kuluma does, T. John Kuluma, you gotta have his name on that list as a possibility.
Yeah. I think guys like Matt Reynolds, you got to have on that list. Man, those offensive lines in the middle of the 2010s were kind of rough there for a second. But
yeah, they were.
Tijon's a great ad. Defense, as we've probably got to wrap up here in a little bit, defense, Kyle Van Noy is your – all everything agreed
has to be.
Yep, for sure.
He's the most iconic BYU defenseman we've had in the last 25 years to this day. Like even above Fred Warner, as far as like what they did when they're at BYU. I mean, when you have a strip sack fumble recovery for a touchdown, it's called a Van Noy.
I mean, I think Kyle's the best defensive player in BYU history, in my personal opinion. Like,
yeah, he's got
one man wrecking crew, like single-handedly won you probably multiple games, like the Ole Miss game and the San Diego State bowl game. Like, I don't think there's another BYU defensive player that you could say has won you one game single-handedly, let alone two, like Kyle did.
Yeah, that, again, I was there at that San Diego State game in 2012 when he literally beat San Diego State by himself. That was... I don't think we'll ever see a linebacker like that at BYU ever again. D-line.
Kyrus Tonga.
I'm going to throw a curve. Kyrus is up there. I'm going to throw a curveball and say Corbin Kafusi.
There's like some sneaky good.
Even above Ziggy.
There's some sneaky good options because you have the Kafusis, you have Ziggy, you have Kyrus. Like, you know, it's a shame they couldn't all play at the same time. Because that would have been certainly quite the defensive line for BYU. But, yeah, I mean, there's some good options for sure. I would probably say Kyrus, but Corbin obviously is not a bad answer either.
Safety, Daniel Sorensen.
That's a pretty good pick.
Like, who else would be in the running with Daniel Sorensen?
Casey Bills.
Kai Nakua.
That's a good one. Oh my gosh! How could I?
Yeah.
How can I forget
Kai's a good one.
I changed my pick. I changed my pick. It's no longer Dan Sorensen. It's Kai Nakua for sure. Oh my gosh, I was on my mission for that game.
I didn't hear Kai's name.
Yeah, no, it's kind of cool. I wasn't there because I was on my mission, but that Boise State pick six for the touchdown. To this day, I hear that is the loudest Lavelle Reed Stadium has ever been. So, yeah, it's kind of cool. I don't know. Pass on the corners.
Jake,
out of mercy, yeah, let's do it.
Jacob Robinson?
Probably, right?
Honestly, yeah.
I guess Brian Logan was a guy there for a little bit.
Dude, Michael Davis is still playing in the NFL.
That's true.
If only he would have played at BYU. Like
if we're being honest.
Advocate here, Hunter.
If we're being honest, we used Fred Warner more at like slot corner than we did inside the box.
I like it. Put freaking Fred at the All-American or All-Independence corner.
I'm down.
On defense, that would be.
We have the best linebacker in the NFL, and he's not even in our consideration for all independence team, which makes sense.
Imagine if Caleb Hayes could catch the football, though. Huh? Yeah?
Or not commit a PI.
I will say the cornerback play has gotten infinitely better as the independence era has gone on, and we have Gennaro Guilford to thank for that. So, all right, wrap it up. Who is your all independence MVP? Like, who is your Heisman Trophy of the independence era?
For me, it's Zach. And I know you don't even have him as your quarterback, but I have him. Like,
I go back and forth on it all the time. If Taysom was healthy, Taysom probably would have been that guy, but he wasn't. So I think Zach is probably the right choice. Like, Zach Wilson saved BYU football.
Yeah, I mean, you could probably make a pretty good argument that the season that Zach had in 2020 directly led to BYU getting the Big 12 invite. Like, to have the season saved, that year, and for him to be the number two overall draft pick, gave a lot of credibility for BYU football, coming off of multiple subpar seasons. And I don't think it's any surprise that the invite to the Big 12 came just months after that whole season wrapped up.
No, I'm totally with you. Like, I think that was probably the first season since, what, 96, that BYU actually gained fans outside of, like, our own footprint. Like, I don't think it can be understated how important that 2020 season was for the BYU football program. I think the only other guy that maybe has as good of an argument would be Kyle, just because of his dominance on the field. Like, there was not a defensive player that had more of an impact on a football game than Kyle Van Noy. Gavin, what's up, man? Let's hear. We have a BYU legend in our midst, as Jackson pointed out earlier. The game-winning holder against Wisconsin. We got Gavin Fowler with us. How you doing, man?
Hey, good, Joe. Thanks for having me on for just a couple minutes, I guess.
Yeah, no worries, man. I want to get, before you kind of get into your thing, I want to hear from your mouth. When was your first year at BYU?
2011.
So you have been with the BYU football program the entirety of the independence era.
Yes.
Holy smokes, dude. That is awesome.
Who better than to have on the Twitter Spaces to discuss the independence era?
I wish you were on here from the start, man. Okay, what was your favorite moment of the independence era?
For me, by far, was the 2021 win against Utah.
Yeah.
Especially because as a staff up until that point, we would get talking because obviously a lot of our guys coached at Utah and then at BYU and all over the state, and so we would talk about our combined records in the rivalry game quite often, and I, up to that point, had never had a win in that game, and so it was good to finally get one.
Yeah, man, that was so awesome. And just for those who don't know, kind of give us, like, what your role is with the program now.
Okay, so right now my job title is I'm a defensive analyst, which a lot of people don't know what that means. They think it means you work analytics or something like that, but basically we're just assistant position coaches. So I am currently serving as the assistant safeties coach to Jay Hill.
Dude, nuts. You worked with the outside linebackers last year, correct?
Yeah, so last year I was the same thing, but with the linebackers, and we kind of split the two groups. And so I had the outside linebackers, Max Tooley, and for part of the season, Peyton Wilgar and Pepe Tonavasa and those guys.
Gavin.
Yeah.
If you can describe Hill in one word, what would it be?
I'm sorry, you cut out for a second. What'd you ask me?
If you could describe Jay Hill in a single word, what would that word be?
One word. Passion. He is extremely passionate about everything he does and extremely deliberate about everything he does. I've never been around somebody that has more energy and excitement and finds true joy in his day-to-day work in life. Really, really enjoy working with him. I've learned a ton from him just in the short time that we've had together so far, and I'm really lucky to be able to work as closely with him as I do, but he dives all into everything he does.
That's awesome. Good. That's great to hear. That's exactly what you want from an associate head coach and defensive coordinator. And I'm sure a lot of fans love to hear that. So that's great.
Love it. Who would your Heisman Trophy winner of the Independence Era be?
From BYU?
Yes.
I feel like it has to be Zach, right? Like, he was already a Heisman candidate and a number two overall draft pick. It's got to be Zach, right?
Yeah. The only other guy I would throw in there would be Kyle Van Noy.
Yeah, Kyle, it's hard because – and I know this because I coach on the defensive side of the ball. Nobody likes defense. But Kyle is debatably the greatest defensive player in the history of BYU football. And so, absolutely, Kyle – and Kyle single-handedly would win games as a defensive player. That doesn't happen very often, so he's pretty special.
So if you had to put – like, when they were in college, him against Fred Warner, who would you pick? That's probably a dangerous question to ask you considering your current job position.
In college, I would say Kyle. Fred was really good, but Fred even surprised and I played with Fred. Fred and I were teammates. I never actually coached Fred. We were just teammates. But Fred surprised all of us. Like, we all knew he was really good. We didn't know he was best linebacker in the NFL good. Where Kyle, I think, is debatably in the conversation for greatest defensive players in the history of BYU football. And there's been a lot of great ones. And so I think in college, Kyle, but obviously the professional career, Fred has been phenomenal.
Maybe you can provide a little bit better insight than us because, again, you were on the team. Who would your all-independence corner be, like cornerback?
This one's kind of weird because I think – if you look at his whole body of work, I think Michael Davis, because he's played and started in the NFL for several years now too. But if you remember, Michael's senior year was a little bit up and down. He had some injuries. He was kind of a rotational guy. So I would probably say Michael Davis, but not necessarily because he was elite while he was at BYU. But if you look at his full body of work with his professional career, he's gone on to achieve the most.
For sure. Best game of the Independence Era that you participated in besides Utah?
Besides Utah?
One that you were just on the team for. Yeah, one that you actually participated.
Wisconsin. When we went out there and beat those guys, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. What was going through your mind on that last field goal?
Dude, this is kind of a funny one. I actually kind of hate talking about it. Like, Dave McCann just reached out to me and did an article about it just the other day, and it actually kind of – it's a weird thing. Like, at the time, we didn't think anything of it. Like, it was just a normal play. Obviously, for Skyler making the kick, like, that was huge for him, but I don't know. At the time, you don't really realize that things aren't perfect. You just kind of see the result of the good kick, and you're just pumped about it, and I didn't really think much of it at the time until Kalani made a big deal of it afterwards. I didn't even realize it at the time.
That's awesome. All right, going forward, next 5 years, what do you feel like the ceiling of the BYU football program is going to the Big 12?
For the next 5 years?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like limiting yourself to anything is just, like, why would we put any limits on ourselves? I think going into the conference now with Big 12 resources and Power 5 resources, I don't see – you see what TCU just did this last year. I don't see any reason why our program couldn't reach heights into the college football playoff and stuff like that as well after the next few years.
That's a great answer.
That might be a little optimistic, but, I mean, us guys wouldn't be doing what we're doing if we didn't believe we could do it.
No, for sure. I don't know if you heard us at the. I don't know if you heard us at the start, but we agree with you. I always think of the college football playoff as like you know top four teams, but like especially now that it's expanding to 12, I don't think there's any reason why BYU couldn't get there in the next you know 5-10 years. What thing? Kind of last two questions. What are you most excited about? Like what aspect of BYU football are you most excited about going forward, and just anything you want to tell the fans to close us out?
Okay, I think actually that'll be a good way for me to segue. I can't stay super long; I got to run. But that's a good question to segue into what I wanted to tell everybody in this space. Anyway, the thing that is always the most special about BYU, and the thing I look forward to the most, is the people, and that's from coaches, fans, players, administration, everyone across the board. BYU is a special place because of the people. And moving into the Big 12 Conference at the Power 5 level only opens up more doors for us to get more high-caliber, great people into the program. And I'm just really, really excited that we're going to be able to get high-quality football players, coaches, staff members, player, everything involved because we're not limited by G5, independent, anything like that anymore. Like, we have a seat at the table with everybody else in the country now, and that's really going to help us. And again, the thing that's the most special about BYU, and this is what we tried to sell on our recruit, on our big official visit we had this last week with these recruits, was, listen, some programs might have certain things better than us, and they might do certain things better than us, but the one thing that is special about BYU that we will hang our hat on is that we have the best people in the country all around. And we want the best people around to push us all to be better every day. And so that was mainly when Joe asked me to come on here and just talk for just a few minutes and answer some questions, guys. I just wanted to say to all of you on here, thank you so much for all your support to the program over these years. Truly, the support from fans and donors and everybody who is just so bought into the program through thick and thin, through good and bad, is what makes this place so special. And so you guys are the people that make people like me and Coach Hill and Kalani and us guys, you guys are the ones that make it worth all the hours and all the hard work and the players and all that. And so thank you so much for your continued support. And again, through the goods and bads, and hopefully we have more goods coming forward as we roll into the new conference.
Love it, man. Appreciate you hopping on with us, brother. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, we'll see you. And to everyone who stuck with us this entire time, we appreciate you. We are going to wrap up this episode. We'll probably repost it if you guys missed any of it. We'll post it on the Hype Train podcast on Spotify, on Apple, wherever you guys listen to your stuff. But again, thank you guys so much. It is awesome to be a BYU fan right now. Go Cougs until the end of time, and let's party this weekend.